coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're going to hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Hi, everyone. I had so much fun chatting with the amazing Vana San. Vana is the owner of Dorsu, an ethical garment manufacturing brand in Cambodia. Vana is a multi-talented, global, passionate go-getter with expertise in brand and marketing strategy, business development, event production and management, luxury retail, media, photography, travel, and more. From working at The Gap in high school to being tapped by a recruiter for the amazing opportunity to open up a luxury retail store in Cambodia, Vana's story is full of unexpected opportunities, and his flexible mindset is something we all need to take on. In this episode, Vana gives pro tips for navigating a new job that you might feel underqualified for, talks about how moments of crisis actually presented opportunities and changes in his career path, and shares why he loves the hands-on and tactile nature of the garment industry, especially in our ever-digital world. I had a ball. You're going to love him. Here is Vana San. So happy to have you here, Vana, and hear your story and connect to you in Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
Which is the place you've been before, right?
Yes, I've been there before, ridden on the back of some motorcycles of people I didn't know there.
When was that?
I think it was 2017.
Oh, just a few years ago.
Were you there then?
Yeah, I've been here since 2010.
So it's been a while. So I'm going to come back, and next time we're obviously going to hang out. I'm so excited to hear your story. We should just dive in one sentence. What do you do?
Jesus Christ, what don't I do? You know, it's hard to sum up in one sentence. Right now, my partner and I are the owners of an ethical garment manufacturing facility in Cambodia. But I also do some work for the distributor in the country. So I kind of juggle different roles and activities, but it's all around kind of making some great products and things for people, whether it's garments or helping them access the best possible technology devices that they can. And, you know, I'll fight you if you want to say that those are
or I other hope brands. No one
but, you know, they're all good. I think I did my master's in communication, culture, and technology. So technology has always been a kind of a key interest of mine. So it kind of makes a bit of sense to kind of stay in that space.
Based on everything I've read about you and researched on you, you have a lot of interests, and we're going to go into those. So it's so funny how you're like, yeah, technology. Well, based on what I've read, it's luxury brands, technology,
what do you want
consumer products, like travel, photography. So please, curious. But I want to just rewind a tad and hear a bit more about you and your background. You were born in Cambodia, moved to the States at some point, and now you're back in Cambodia. So a bit curious to hear about growing up in a different country. When did you come to America? What was that like for you as a child, young adult, growing up? Damn.
Yeah. You know, my family is Cambodian and a little bit Vietnamese. So we're originally from this area. And I was actually born in a refugee camp in Thailand. So not Cambodia per se, but we immigrated to the US in 1984. So I was just a few years old, three or four years old, and grew up in the States my whole life. So it's not an uncommon experience, I think, these days for people to have that kind of bicultural, multicultural experience. Yeah, I grew up in Massachusetts, which was a really interesting place to spend one's formative years in the 80s and early 90s. My family is definitely Cambodian.
It's Cambodian, it's American, it's all the things. And I'm really curious later on to ask about going back to Cambodia and what was that like. But I'm wondering, what was your first job ever?
My first job ever? Oh my God, I definitely had a paper route when I was, you know, 11 or 12, however old you had to be to start making money in the US. But I remember having a paper route. That was probably my first like, you know, hustle.
Really?
Yeah, I delivered newspapers for the Lowell Sun in my neighborhood. And, you know, it was the first time you had to open a bank account and, you know, you had to like make arrangements for when the newspapers would arrive in the morning, when you distribute, when you collect money. So I think it's, you know, it's kind of like a really cool little entrepreneurial adventure for young kids. But I think that was my first job. I mean, besides like stupid made up shit, like at home and, you know, well, like turning the TV into like a movie theater and charging your siblings like
oh yeah, was that something you did?
Yeah, yeah. I grew up with three younger siblings, so we would always kind of play around and kind of, you know, turn the furniture into different structures and create, like, live out our imaginary fantasies of whether it was like doing a business or
like
running
money?
A restaurant. I don't know if it was money, but it was like monetary. It was like pieces of paper.
Some
know?
Kind of currency.
Some kind of currency. We definitely played Monopoly at home. Like we were, you know, we were a little entrepreneurial bunch.
Yeah.
I think my parents, we had like some like Cambodian grocery stores in the family when we were growing up. So that was kind of, you know, my mom and dad and several aunts and uncles and extended family. We grew up in a kind of, you know, small business environment in terms of stocking the shelves and operating the cash register and, you know, saying hello to customers and all that jazz. So
definitely. Yeah,
it was a fun little, you know, upbringing in the middle of cold and blistery New England.
Yeah.
For a bunch of Southeast Asian refugees.
Yeah, Lowell, right? They have a strong Cambodian presence, a strong Cambodian community.
Second largest in the States, yeah.
Oh, wow.
After Long Beach. Have you been to either Long Beach or Lowell?
I have not. You know, I always love asking people first jobs or when you were little or what you were doing. And I feel like it can be very indicative of what you end up doing, not saying like, oh, now you're a newspaper mogul and things like that. But just the fact that started working at a young age, what does that mean? Working with customers, having kind of the sense of responsibility at a young age. So I
think it's something that's so key to kind of, you know, growing up in the States is that there's always been kind of a respect for entrepreneurship and kind of a business mindset. And I think that that was one of the things that was very much, I think, like supported and developed amongst immigrant communities, you know, because it was also kind of a way of redeeming your existence for being alive and, you know, like what you're trying to achieve and do. And I think that that was a really strong anchor in the community, you know, where like small businesses and entrepreneurs and people trying to do stuff. I also think the contrast between what Cambodian immigrants were going through were fleeing from in the 70s, right? Like communist regimes and environments and moving into a more pro-capitalist one, I think also kind of reflects itself in the decision to try something that was kind of forbidden for them for a long time.
Absolutely.
It's also interesting.
It's so interesting. And it makes a lot of sense, I guess. It's kind of like a direct response to this was forbidden. You weren't allowed to do this. You didn't have these freedoms. And now you can kind of start your own thing on your own terms.
Yeah. I think it's one of those kind of uniquely American things, like in the 20th century, that, you know, the kind of the American identity became very well known for. It's since globalized and honestly, like, you know, entrepreneurs in developing countries are kind of amazing and inspiring in their own, you know, in their own ways and in their own context. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, what do you do to create value and to find meaning or make meaning in the work that you do, you know, or in your life. And I think that one avenue into that is through work and what we choose to, how we choose to spend our time, what we choose to spend our time doing. I think this lockdown period and kind of this whole experience with Corona and realizing that we're not fully in control of what happens to us from a day-to-day basis and like being reminded that we can't take anything for granted, you know, kind of helps us remember that everything that we do is, it's up to us. How you spend your time and what you're doing with your life is up to you, you know, and you can't take it for granted. This might be what you're doing today. Who knows what you're going to be doing 3-6 months from now. For the record, my horizon in terms of timing or planning is really just like 3 to 6 months. Like if you can have visibility on the next 3 to 6 months, like you're pretty golden. Like after that, like,
yeah, you know, that's so good for people to hear. That doesn't have to be all set up years in advance.
Yeah, I think also, I think I grew up in a somewhat volatile environment as well. We didn't have the same kind of stability of, you know, kind of middle class bourgeois like stability. And I think that kind of teaches you also to be very flexible and to be kind of more responsive to the whatever winds are blowing outside and the, you know, potentials for change and not taking things for granted. And I think that that's kind of reflected itself later on in my life through kind of my ability to kind of go along with things and, you know, kind of make decisions. Yes, you come to certain decision points and where you do have to stake a claim in things, but also like not to hold too fast onto things if it seems like they're starting to slip away. However that, you know, however
interesting
that plays out.
Well, yeah, it makes sense what you're saying based on a lot of the work you've been doing that's very dynamic in many different fields. And we're going to talk about that now. So rewind. Yeah. Before you took ownership of Dorsu, which we are going to dive into.
I seized ownership. No, I didn't take ownership.
Seized. I did not say seized.
It was not a hostile takeover.
It was
It just sounded so like.
Before. You know, oh, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that. It wasn't like that. But you'll tell us how the handover of
power the acquisition.
For sure.
The acquisition. The transfer of power. I'm the transitional authority.
Were you working in retail before? Like you have experience in brand marketing strategy, biz dev, event production. Yeah. What's go? Were
actually, I think my second job in my life was in retail.
Okay.
I worked the Gap like in the summers during high school and part of college as well. So
did you ever think you were going to be an owner of a clothing company?
I think there was always a kind of fascination with like where clothes come from and how they get made. And my parents, when I was growing up, would travel back and forth between the US and Cambodia in the summers. Like they'd take their few week holiday over to Cambodia, whatever. We got the house to ourselves. We didn't ask questions.
That's cool.
they'd come back with like suitcases full of like, you know, like faux designer shirts and, you know, all of this crazy stuff. I was like, what? But it would be like, you know, wrapped in like janky plastic and like, you knew it was like, just like asking yourself, like, is this real? Being like, it's from Cambodia. Everything is real. I kind of grew up with a bit of a fascination around that. And like working at the mall, it was just like working at the mall, right? Like it wasn't like a conscious decision. It was like, oh, weighing like the branding and like ethical, like, you know, aspects of working here or like Auntie Anne's pretzel shop, you know, like it could have been whatever. Just happened to be the Gap, Gap Kids. But no, so that was like my first retail experience. And that was, but that teaches you all you need to know, really, about the entire industry.
Does it?
I mean, you learn about SKUs and stocking shelves and, you know, kind of customer service and, you know, changing over seasonal palettes. A bit of visual merchandising. Like, honestly, I guess like my experience at DFS, which was like 2015 to 2018, you know, that was like major luxury retail. And that was on a completely different scale, you know.
Tell us more about that.
So DFS is a subsidiary, part of the Louis Vuitton family of companies. It's a
nice family to be a part of.
Louis who? It's the travel retail division, which means they are responsible for most of the shops and things at the airports and like major travel locations. And Siem Reap, which is the gateway to Angkor Wat and the major, you know, tourist town in Cambodia, was slated to open one in 2015. Chinese tourists had been increasing year on year. So there was a huge opportunity there to present some world-class brands and build a beautiful store. Yeah, it was a really cool project. It was building a store. It was amazing. It was building a store from the ground up. It was, you know, kind of one of those like once in a lifetime projects and experiences that you get to make something from virtually the beginning, working with an incredible team of people around the world. And but, you know, my previous to jumping into that, my only experience in retail was like working for The Gap like 12 years prior.
So how do you get to that point where a luxury business taps you to build this big deal?
Random, because I was in Phnom Penh, had spent maybe a couple of years working on a project in New York, kind of going back and forth, and had my resume and CV out with some HR companies or recruiters and stuff, and was contacted by a recruiter. It was like one of those like headhunting things. Yeah, the recruiter sent me the JD and asked me if I was interested. And at first I was like, this is weird. Like, what? But then like recognize, doing my research into the company and realizing that this is totally legit. You know, going into it with like that recognition that you're entirely like underqualified and don't know what the hell.
I love it.
You know, but something about it is just like, oh my God, like you also look at the other opportunities being presented to you. And so it's like, you know, all relative, right? So it's not like, oh, I could just do this or that. It's like, well, seriously, like what are the things that I could be doing? I applied honestly without a single shred of, you know, hope that anything would come of it, more for the experience of just like, I think I just like interviews. Like, I think I just really, I just think it's like the best way to like really get to know something, you know? So it was like, let's see where this goes, right? And it was a long process. I think the whole entire recruitment process was like 6 months. I'd never been through one of those.
Oh my God.
6 month like executive search. Processes before. And it was like multiple interviews. It was like being flown around for interviews was like my first time of like, okay, this is real.
You're fancy.
Fancy.
Oh my God. Wait, I have a few questions about this. Back it up. First of all, you said you had no hope. You weren't qualified. So the questions are, one, how insecure were you starting? Did you feel like, oh gosh, what am I doing here? Like they're going to find
out. Once I got the job?
Yes. Did you feel like, oh God, I'm not qualified, I'm freaking out? And two,
100% every day.
Why do you think they picked you? If you feel like you're qualified, what'd they see in you?
To be honest, I was told later that I was the first candidate that they interviewed, and that's why it took them so long to make a decision, because they were kind of like, okay, like super jazzed after the first interview, and they were like, this guy's great, we can't wait to meet more great people. They might have been expecting somebody cheaper, more local. I think that they were, you know, and I presented myself with like international credentials and, you know, like international education, very expensive education, still paying for it. It was a longer sell on their side to get everybody aligned. And, you know how businesses and corporations need to all get aligned before anything can happen.
I know.
I think when you're waiting for somebody to make a decision for 6 months, you go through a journey of reconciling yourself to like the very real possibility of not getting it, you know, mentally kind of coping with that. So I was fine. You know, I think by that time I was underqualified in many ways and that I was overqualified in many ways, you know, and that it was just kind of like, you know, if I get this opportunity, then it's a chance for me to kind of show myself like what I can do, you know, and, you know, clearly like there are experiences and capacities that I would be bringing to this that would be very valuable and helpful. And then there's also ways that I'm completely out of my league and need to learn from other people and sit back and listen. And one of the best pieces of advice that I've ever got about like working a new job or like going into a new team is just like, your number one goal is really to just fit in. Like whatever that means, like when you're working with a team or with a corporate organization or a new brand, like you kind of have to kind of spend the first few weeks, if not months, figuring out if you fit in with what's going on there. And it's either way, it's not like it's not a good or bad thing either way. It's just kind of like, that's the reality. Like you either fit in with this environment, with this energy, with this purpose, with this mission, or you don't. That was my biggest thing to myself going into it was like, okay, Vana, like, can you do this? Can you fit in? Can you run with the pack? You know, like, these are people who are infinitely decades of experience in merchandising and inventory management and visual expertise. And, you know, it's, there's a whole lot to running a huge retail organization. And I was blissfully ignorant about most of it before going in. But thankfully, I love learning. So
yeah, that's a huge part of it. It's this continuous learning. And I think what you just said about your attitude is such a good way for all of us to look at new jobs and new opportunities. On the one hand, going into it being like, here's what I know. Here are my qualifications. Mm-hmm. I have these strengths. Here's also, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to be new. And I need to listen. And I need to ask the questions. And I don't know. And I'll learn, you know, instead of just going into a job being like, oh shit, they're going to find out I don't know anything. Recognizing you have things, you have skills, you have whatever they saw in you to choose you for this kind of job. And yeah, there's a lot of room to grow and get into it. Were you working a different job while you were in this 6-month interview process?
I was still doing work for this art project that was kind of partly based in New York and in Cambodia. I was doing that and probably doing some like projects, like marketing projects for different organizations.
Before Dorsu and DFS, you were kind of working on a bunch of different projects at once. Were you freelancing? Is this a lifestyle and a career style that you enjoyed? You have a lot of different passions, so you wanted to do a lot of different projects, working in a lot of different fields with a lot of different people. Would someone be like, yeah, that's Vana. He's everywhere with everyone and doing a bunch of things because he's jazzed about everything.
Yes. I think we individually lack the perspective on ourselves, right? Like was it RuPaul that once said, like, what other people think about you is none of your business.
Oh, I think so. It's really good.
Fully subscribe to this. Personally, I've just tried to kind of follow what my instincts tell me to do. And I haven't really been tied down, you know, to something. And, you know, I think it was also more so moving to Cambodia 10 years ago, like the environment changes. Like, this is not, you know, New York City where there's hundreds and thousands of companies that you could be working for, all different kinds, right, and different organizations. But like in Cambodia, I mean, there's like what, a handful of legitimate companies and kind of smaller consolidated conglomerates that you could be working for. And it's a different work landscape. It's very rare to see somebody that's been with an organization for years and years, because organizations haven't been around for years and years here.
Yeah.
Still kind of an emerging market. If you're coming from a kind of international background and, you know, you have some experiences in organizations or companies, you have some experience in different kind of specializations or fields, like, you'll be able to cobble something together, right? And I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, this is not like 1950s or 60s America where there's a dream to be working a salary. And, you know, I think that there's that myth of stability has been completely blown apart, you know, over the course of the past couple of 20 years or so. But somebody could look at me and say like, he's doing this and that and all sorts of things. And I wouldn't be wrong.
Right. Oh, no. When I said it, it's not at all. I mean, it's not a bad thing at all. I look at you, I'm reading up on you before I talk, and I'm like, damn, this guy is so talented. He's done so much. He has so many passions. He has so many interests. He's worked in so many different industries. I feel like, yes, in our time right now, it's more frequent for people to job hop and hop around, and it's expected and it's what's happening. It might be a bit different than our parents' generation who are in the same industry for 40 years or so, but it just speaks, I think, and again, I like what you just said, what other people think of you isn't any of their business. But at the same time, when I'm meeting you and talking to you, I'm trying to understand a bit about you. And I would have to say that, oh, he's a passionate guy with a lot of interests, and he's proactive and working in all those interests. And before you settle down now on Dorsu, I wanted to ask about getting back to Cambodia. Was that always part of the plan? Did you always want to live in Cambodia, work in Cambodia?
It was never part of the plan. I would say.
I love that. Yes.
I mean, it was like a long time making. It was never in the plan. And I was probably the last person in Lowell that you would have guessed would be the one who would go back to Cambodia. It was, I think, like right before the financial, or right after the financial crisis, 2008, and living in New York and being out of grad school and just kind of looking at your life and being like, you know, what is the, I've done a lot of amazing things and I've achieved a lot. And what is, you know, what is that thing that's still missing, you know, in your life? And what is the thing that's the big gaping hole was Cambodia. And so when the, you know, the financial crisis happened, it was also another turning point for, I think, a lot of us to reckon with, you know, what are we doing with our lives and which, you know, what do I want to be doing? And yeah, I kind of wanted to start filling in what Cambodia was all about and what it, you know, what it could be for my life. And so, you know, I got a bit of the travel bug at that time and wanted to kind of, you know, get out of the city and go explore a bit, and fell into some luck with, you know, getting an opportunity to come to Southeast Asia and travel and saving some money and putting all my stuff in storage, which it coincidentally still is under the BQA.
It's still in storage?
Oh my God, it's been 10 years. I paid so much money.
Oh my God, your really stuff is still in storage. Where is it?
I know. It's in like Fort Greene.
What's there? Like a couch?
Some lamps, like furniture, like a desk that I was going to give to my son, imaginary son. That was like,
I love it.
But mostly books, like trunks and trunks and trunks of books that I've accumulated. Books and like photo albums, right? Yeah. Because like you just knew photo albums weren't going to be around for a long time.
Yeah. So we have them some Polaroids. They're locked up safe for us.
Some hard drives.
Some hard drives. Some floppy disks that nothing is going to, by the time you, it's going to be like a time, what is it? Like a time box
capsule?
Or a time capsule. We're going to open it. And
a time box.
Why can't I talk? It's going to be like a time capsule. You're going to open it and be like, oh my God, look at all this. Wait, none of this works. When did the opportunity to buy a garment business come up? Where were you at in your life when this opportunity presented itself to you?
There's a theme here, right? Like every time there's a crisis, it was Corona. It was really the, you know, the Corona virus kind of exploding on the global stage, and the impact that it was having in Cambodia was predominantly economic initially, right? The health risks were initially kind of minimal. Now it's a kind of a different story. But yeah, once Corona hit, I think we all had another opportunity to kind of take a step back and reflect on like, what am I doing with my life? And what can I be doing? And just being a person living in Cambodia, you couldn't get away from kind of the impact of the economic fallout on the garment industry here. Yeah, you know, having had experience in retail and working more on the end of like marketing and sales and, you know, thinking about consumer marketing and psychology from that perspective, I think that, you know, I wanted to kind of learn more about the manufacturing side and the production side. And, you know, this was a vital sector in this country's economy. Dorsu was a brand that I had been following and had purchased from for several years previously. They make the best t-shirts in the country, bar none, hands down.
In the world? So, would you dare say the world?
Absolutely not. No. Oh. You got to have something to strive for, right?
Oh, that's true. That's good.
Don't tell my team that.
I won't. Should I edit this part out?
No. It's a small, medium manufacturer in Cambodia. In the textile manufacturing scene, we're pretty small compared to the larger factories that crank out product for fast fashion brands and retailers globally. There's a lot of sourcing and production that happens here. Yeah, so I think it was partly seeing the impact that Corona had on the economy, having a curiosity about the garment sector and production and manufacturing, and knowing that all of that needs to change, and kind of instinctively understanding that like the textile garment manufacturing industry is fucked. Like it's just like understanding the environmental impact and the social impact, and just being appalled by this system that's global and feeds off of just like ridiculously destructive patterns of behavior and, you know, systems that are set up to disenfranchise people and devalue the work of labor happening in developing countries and ridiculous pricing schemes that go into profiting major shareholders or corporations for it. I mean, it's just the whole thing. And I think previous, for the year prior, like I had been doing this online MBA program. So I was kind of learning more just on the business side. You know, like it's one thing to work on the marketing side or on retail, but once you are in a more kind of, you take a more holistic approach to how does this company or this organization derive profit from the activities that they do, and yeah. You just, you know, learning all about all of that more made me a bit more confident when the opportunity to acquire the business kind of came up.
And Dorsu sells ethical apparel. It's through informed sourcing. Can you share a bit about that?
You know, sustainable and ethical fashion is a field of intense debate and conversation right now that is really, you know, it's really passionate and it's really exciting conversation to be involved. I cannot claim to be an expert in any of these things. I mean, my background is in helping make organizations work better, helping people in working, making things better. And I think that, you know, this is just a field where, you know, there's so many amazing ideas and so many amazing things that people are trying to affect change in this industry. It's a broad topic. It's like, there's so many aspects to it. And then there's just the real, like the very real, like being a small business owner and paying salary and payroll. That's like, you know, whether or not you're making pizzas or cars or ethical clothing, whatever that means, like 50% of my day is not like thinking about, what silhouettes will next year's like sustainable conscious consumer be into? No, it's really more like checking my banks and making sure that there's enough cash to pay all of the people that I owe.
Right. So I wanted to hear a bit more about the day to day. Like, what does your work day look like now? And I would love to hear the highlight of the workday and then the part that kind of sucks and you're just like, you know, I could do without this. Because we need to be real here. People need to know.
The highlight of any day is always the people. And the low light of the day is always the people. Just kidding. No, the people are always the best. The low lights can vary. Sometimes it's the people. Day to day, I would say I work with a team of 20 people, 15 on the production floor and about 5 management staff. And working with a team that's predominantly women, that's predominantly Cambodian, working with clients who are all over the world and partners who are all over the world. You know, we sell to retailers and other businesses and organizations around the world that are interested in making better t-shirts and buying better t-shirts, right? So we have a direct-to-consumer business that's online and people can purchase online from us at dorsu.org, but we also custom manufacture merchandise for other brands and other partners, whether that's an NGO that wants to give 100 t-shirts to its team and its constituents for an event or for a special occasion, or whether that's a large tech company, you know, that's wanting to do the same and just doesn't want to go to Kmart to buy 100 t-shirts and bring them to a toxic printing shop to make, you know. Yeah, it's kind of amazing to work with all the different kinds of groups and organizations that are interested in being a part of doing things differently. In this sector that seems to be so, it's like the opposite of high tech, right? Like, I mean, I'm sure there's parts of it that's like 3D printing and AI, and there are definitely parts of the garment industry that I'm sure are highly technologized, but I kind of look at what we're doing is like, you know, fairly tactile and tangible, and that's kind of great.
Like the building blocks.
It's I mean, I love seeing
stuff. It's the straight up stuff. It's no
carrying rolls. I mean, carrying rolls of fabric, like carrying hundreds of kilograms.
That's
of fabric,
how you get jacked.
Figure out. Great exercise. Seeing textiles be cut, you know, by our industrial cutting machine, like just seeing the tools, the very real processes, you know, like just seeing paper patterns being made before things get sewn. And it's for me, it's really awesome to be working in a company that's dealing with very real things, because I think just so many people work in like this digital world now.
Yeah,
and I know our business totally. Is digital too. I mean, I don't really know what that means.
Totally.
It's like, but I'm so happy that I get, you know, at the end of the month, I can be like, we made 1,500 t-shirts this month. Mm-hmm. That's great. Now get them out of my house.
Yeah, it's like real. It's hands-on. It's not just in this La La Land digital world. It's very
it's tactile. It's real.
It is tactile.
Yeah. Half of my day is just dealing with the manufacturing and the garment production side, and reviewing lists of fabric that we need to buy, checking over tech packs or, you know, proposals for clients, checking over pricing and all of that stuff. And then the other half, I would say there's a lot that's involved with logistics and shipping, right? Like, just once you make the clothes, you have to get them where they're going to. So it's, you know, figuring out how to get 1,000 t-shirts over to Germany or Japan or Portugal, wherever they're going, and just managing all of that under Corona conditions.
Oh my gosh. It's really dynamic work. It's a lot of different people. It's a lot of different communication. It's like you said, some of it is the physical labor. Some of it is working behind the computer, figuring out the finances. It's kind of mixing together a lot of different things.
Did you know also, it's like flashback, like Lowell was like the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution in America, and garment and textile manufacturing, like, there was a huge center for that in the 19th century, in the early 19th century. And we grew up going to visit the mills, learning about how textiles were made. And so I just feel like what I'm doing now is kind of a culmination of everything that I've ever done, all rolled into. Like every decision or every experience that you've had in the past kind of contributes to where you are in your life right now. And you wouldn't be here without all of those things happening.
I was going to ask you, what advice would you give to someone who doesn't know what to do with his or her life? And I feel like at least what you just said is some kind of element of reassurance or advice that everything you've done until now, it all kind of builds up and leads you to where you're supposed to be. But is there any other advice you would give to someone?
I would just say, let go of trying to figure it out. Learn to meditate, definitely. Like, that's helped me kind of being able to create distance between my thoughts and my anxieties and my concerns, and giving yourself that space to kind of let things ruminate and let them just be, and recognize that, you know, you'll know when you need to make a decision and when you need to, you know, like, take action. But otherwise, like, you can just kind of let things be. You can kind of just wait it out a bit. If your biggest struggle every day is, what should I do with my life? Like, you are so privileged.
You are so lucky.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, to be able to to contemplate that question.
I mean, absolutely. It's amazing.
I mean, like, it just means you're probably more feeling overwhelmed by the overwhelming variety.
By choices, yeah.
You know, yeah, by, like, this menu that you're like, I hate menus. Like, I just cannot go into a restaurant. And it's like, Cambodia, like, they have these laminated, like, 16-page menus.
Huge, you know?
You're like, how many ways can you fry the bok choy? So it's like, I don't want to be given, like, all of the options and all of the opportunities. Let's see, like, what makes sense for where I am right now? What makes sense for who I am right now, and just thinking about where I want to go, where do I want to go next? Like, I have to recognize that what I'm doing now with Dorsu, yes, it's for Dorsu and it's for this company and this organization and this thing that I really believe in and I'm so passionate about, but it's also kind of a step in what's after that, you know? So having a bit of vision to be able to say, like, well, this is, you know, what is the life that I want to lead? And how does this play a part in that, right? Like, if I want to be traveling and spending time with my family in the US and my family in Australia and friends and, you know, partners in other parts of the world, like, is this something that fits into that? Can this play a role in that? And, like, for me, absolutely, 100%. You know, so that's where I feel like I've kind of put things into place to help build the life that I want to have. So, like, moving away from, like, a job or a career or work, like, you got to think about, what is that lifestyle that you want? Like, what is that, you know, what is that life you want to be living? And then, like, kind of work backwards from there. Like, I've always loved Japan. I've been fascinated by it. And I was like, it would be amazing. It's an amazing place to, you know, to learn and work. And now with Dorsu, like, we have clients and partners in Japan. Like, me making a business trip there on a yearly basis makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
You know, wow. Spending time there. or like having to go back to New York to touch base with, you know, different partners, or going to Australia because that's one of our major markets, recognizing that, you know, I wanted to have this certain kind of life, and then kind of creating that right opportunity work-wise that would allow me to achieve that.
I feel like that's the goal for everyone, to kind of be able to create that, and also figuring out what you want and understanding that, and then having the flexibility and ability to make it. Vana, where can people follow you, Dorsu, stay up to date on what you're doing, purchase some amazing t-shirts, give us the deets.
Through what should I do with my life.com?
No, .co. But no, where, where?
It can't, it cannot.
Where can people follow you?
They cannot follow me.
Why?
I don't want to be followed. That's creepy.
Okay. Do you want people? Where can people? Where can people shop for awesome, ethically sourced, beautiful clothing?
If people want to learn more about Dorsu, they can visit www.dorsu.org and learn more just about the company and what we're doing in Cambodia. And they can also shop there.
And no one's going to follow you because that's creepy.
That is creepy. You can send me an email. I mean, I'm happy to receive emails. I'm old fashioned. Write me a letter. Somebody send me a postcard.
What's the snail
please.
Mail? All right. Let me know your address and I'll put it in the show notes. I'm just kidding. I think that's not a safe thing.
Yeah, no, I'm on Instagram, as is, you know, everybody else. And I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram. You can connect with me if you'd like to.
You don't have
I'm always
to.
Happy to chat. I do. I mean, I don't
want to peer pressure you into people following you. You just said it was creepy. I don't know if you're joking or serious. Do you want this or not? Vana, help me out here. I don't understand.
I want the right people following me.
Oh, I can't help you with that. I can only hope people that do. I can't do that.
I need a product market fit.
I don't know if I can be that, do that filtering for you, but this was so awesome.
I just want you to follow me.
I do
want
follow
you to keep
you.
In touch. I want you to keep in touch with me.
I'm going to keep in touch with you. Are you going to?
You're my target audience. Yeah.
You're my target audience. I want to keep in touch with you, and I want to visit you, and I want to go out
yeah,
with some pen when shit dies down.
Yeah, I'd love that.
I'm coming over.
Around.
We're hanging out. But Vana, this rocked. You're such a
so fun.
Pleasure. It's really fun. I feel like we know each other and we could just schmooze and chat. Thank you so much. You're awesome.
Thanks.
We'll talk
this
soon,
so
okay?
Fun.
Thanks, Vana. Hi, everyone. I clearly had a great time talking to Vana, if you couldn't tell. He shared so many great insights that I think can be super helpful to all of us. I love how Vana said that when starting a new job, the first few weeks and months should really be about checking to see if you fit in with the company vibe. Do you fit in with the energy, the purpose, the mission of the company? If not, it's fine. And it goes both ways. Does the company and what you're doing fit in with your strengths, your values, how you want to spend your day? Really good advice when starting off and trying to check out how you fit into things. Vana also says that when starting a new job that you feel is a bit out of your league, go in acknowledging what you know, your qualifications, your strengths, what you have to give, and also be ready to listen, learn, and grow. When it comes to feeling overwhelmed with the thought of what should I do with my life, Vana says don't look at the huge list of options and opportunities, but think about what makes sense for where you are right now, who you are right now, and where you want to go next. I had an amazing time. Check out more information about Dorsu and shop at dorsu.org, and links are in the show notes. Bye.